Case number 84779, Greenleaf Farm Holdings versus Belmont. Counsel, are you both ready to proceed?
Sure, Your
Honor. All right, excellent. And Mr. Markman, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I would like to reserve 3 minutes.
Okay, it'll ding at 3 minutes, but it'll keep running, so it's up to you to stop.
Thank
you. If you want. Okay.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors, for your time. May it please the court. First, I'm going to start by addressing 2 points. First and foremost, the primary issue in dispute is whether the district court improperly found that my client could not exercise his contractual right to buy a warehouse owned by respondent Belmont under an executed and binding lease with the purchase option agreement. Second, that Belmont's improper taking of possession of the warehouse, including seizing my client's property and large amounts of cannabis without the proper licensure of the state of Nevada, created the after-acquired claims of offset and conversion. Belmont knew this and agreed to these issues being tried by consent on the record at the May 24th, 2021 hearing. Thus, fairness warrants the same. Following the seizure of the cannabis, the issues continued to expand, which leads us to where we are here now. There is no dispute that this agreement or that the option to purchase exists. Despite this, my client was denied the opportunity to exercise the purchase option once it elected to do so.
But you were in constant all the way through. How can you come in and argue that they didn't comply with the terms of the contract?
Well, and that goes to waiver, Your Honor. The Belmont waived its right to enforce that. They sat back on their hands. They waited 3 years. They allowed this money to accrue so that they could try to put themselves into a position to acquire cannabis license because they knew they wouldn't be able to get them.
Didn't they at some point negotiate new terms with you and didn't comply with the payment obligations even after it was negotiated?
They negotiated new terms, but what's notably silent in those new terms is there's nothing that revokes the option to purchase. So they had the opportunity when Greenleaf was in behind on its lease payments that they could have said, we're going to terminate the option of purchase. You can still use the property. This is our new agreement. They chose not to do that.
But in your opposition to summary judgment, you stated, and I quote, Greenleaf recognizes that Belmont was likely entitled to refuse Greenleaf's attempt to exercise the option at that point in time, and therefore it withdraws that claim for relief. What should we do with that concession? Well,
I think that the concession, if you look at the beginning of that paragraph, starts with, based on this interlocutory order, these finding of facts were not likely to win at this point. So this is based on these prior finding of facts that were issued at the preliminary injunction, and to have the court overturn itself at that point was highly unlikely and created an issue where it was just going to be very difficult to win at that point. And besides that,
I agree. You did say at that point, but you said it withdraws that claim for relief. I don't know what a district judge is to make of that statement.
And I think, again, you have to look at how the whole paragraph reads. I understand that it was withdrawn at that point.
Yeah.
I did not write that, Your Honor. But if you look at it, it stems from these prior order that was incorporated, and it was pretty much verbatim incorporated into the order for the motion for summary judgment.
Okay, but let's set that aside. Legally, you have a lease and you haven't paid rent since 2018. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that, Your Honor.
And the consideration for the option is the lease, the payment of rent, correct?
Well, it's not clear in that. So, I mean, to some degree, there's some, I guess, ambiguity in that. But again, that goes to waiver, and it goes to Belmont
non-performance and breach, right?
I mean, there's no dispute that the payments weren't being made, but at no point does Belmont say you're in breach, you're in default, we're terminating the lease. They say you're behind on rent, we'll give you a little bit more time. A few months later, another email, you're behind on rent, we'll give you a little bit more time. So they have these options and they chose to waive it.
But what was the consideration for the option?
I mean, the consideration for the option was partly that there was shares in Greenleaf. They had, I believe it was 2 million shares out of a billion. They had a percentage of shares, so that's part of the consideration. That was part of the agreement. They have, obviously payment of the leases is a big part of the consideration, right? But again, if you choose to waive it, now you have to come back and say, we're no longer waiving it. You're in default. You have 15 days to get current. They chose not to do that. They sat there for 3 years to try to lull him in, acquiring more and more debt so that they could seize the cannabis, seize the license without any authority to do so.
Acquiring more and more debt because you could have started paying the rent, right? You could have started paying the lease at any time. And they were in contact with your client throughout. Like you've called it like, hey, try to pay or whatever. So is that really a waiver if a landlord tries to work with a tenant? Is that really a waiver?
I believe it is a waiver when you go to the such lengths. And it's a 3-year period. So it's not, hey, we're working with you for a month. We're working with you for 2 months. You're talking over 3 years. You're talking an extended period of time. And all they have to do is say, this is in breach. This is in default. This is terminated. Any of those words, and it's a completely different argument. It's a completely different situation.
Now, didn't they alert Greenleaf before Greenleaf tried to exercise the option that they were going to move forward on the breach?
They did not. They said you're not going to be able to extend the option on the lease. That's a completely different option. So there's an option to extend and there's an option to purchase. So they say you cannot extend the lease, but they did not say you cannot exercise your option to purchase. So those are two different provisions contained within the contract. And at no point did they say that. And then as soon as my client follow the lease and exercise his option to purchase, it was the next day they said, we're terminating your lease. But by that point, it's too late. We're now in the vendor-vendee relationship, and you no longer get the option to say, we're terminating it. It's that vendor-vendee relationship at that point. And as it goes into offset, I think it's very important that we allow this offset, affirmative defense or the conversion claim to move forward. That was to be tried by consent. I believe the direct quote from Belmont's counsel at the time was, as it is, Your Honor, we've taken back the building. If they have got damages they want to pursue, they can do that in this court. We've got competing lawsuits that are still pending. And I do want to make one note, Your Honor. I believe cited in the brief, it says at 6AA 1154, but it's 1146. So I do want to make sure that that's clear. But that is a direct quote from a transcript of an evidentiary hearing on the court record, allowing for the offset to be tried by consent.
Didn't the district court judge say that your client could file a motion to amend the pleadings to assert conversion and offset and or offset? But that no such motion was filed. And indeed, there's another case pending, I think we could take judicial notice of, where those are separately pleaded as a separate action.
I don't recall the court ever saying that you should go ahead and amend your complaint. I don't recall seeing that in the record. I know that there was discussion, obviously, that there's going to be additional damages. I know that Belmont's counsel
said, it's in the answering brief. I don't know whether it's in the record, but in the answering brief at page 18, they say that.
And didn't the district court offer to allow both parties to file motions if they had concerns about personal property being improperly removed and or stuck on the premises and nobody filed anything?
I believe the court said, you can address this by motion because this was, the hearing was a oral argument, but based on the fact the prior order from the district court said, we need to do this in an orderly fashion.
So when the court said you can file something to tell us what you're out or what's missing or what property, your client did not file anything at that time in response. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of anything being filed at that time. I know the original underlying complaint contained the contract, which contained these offset provisions. So this contract has these offset provisions. If they were to seize any property from the building, so it's in the original complaint. As an exhibit, not as a specific paragraph, because this had not happened yet. This happened during the course of litigation, I would say in contravention of the district court's order at the time to say to do this in an orderly fashion.
As it happened, the court said, file a motion and tell us basically what's missing, damaged, or confined, correct?
As previously stated, I don't recall seeing that in the record. And if you have that in front of you, then I have no reason to dispute that at this time. But I don't believe that I saw that in the record. And further, I mean, they agreed to try it by consent at that time. So they're aware of this. There's no unfair prejudice. They knew of it. They created it. I mean, the council was the one that there. They were there when the cannabis was seized. They went in. This is not something that typically happens in litigation. And you're talking about a large amount of cannabis at the time. So nobody at that premise, because this was done before the CCB was even there, was allowed to possess the cannabis, to have the cannabis. And I don't think it's something that we want to, as a state, condone. And I think this case was still fairly early. I think there's about 3 or 4 months of discovery that had been done after the JCCR. And obviously there was, you know, I think a 56D request that, while not formally made, substantially complies with the rules.
Do you agree Greenleaf was in breach?
In breach
of the lease.
I believe that they had not fulfilled the lease option, but I think, or not the lease option, I take that back. I believe that they had not been making their lease payments, but I do not believe that the formal words breach were ever used, and I believe that's required by the lease.
What obligation did Greenleaf have beyond paying rent?
I mean, the biggest obligation obviously is paying rent. And they had issued shares. I think that's part of their obligation. They issued shares. They had executed these secured interest agreements, which again, I think.
Which are, you're disputing the legality.
Well, I think legally, if you look at it, it's obviously cannabis is a very new law in the state and what's, you know, required. I think it's improper because what happens is what happened here. You have the security interest, and you have it in the inventory, which is cannabis, but you can't have that in the cannabis. And I see that I have 3 minutes remaining. Unless you have a question, I'll sit down.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Rex Garner. I represent Belmont, the landlord, and the prevailing party below. I also feel like I'm here to advocate for the district court, who entered a judgment and by doing so made no error or law or fact. And I say that for this reason. The judgment below did nothing more than hold the respondents to the promises they made years ago in writing. Ironically, however, after years of not fulfilling those promises, they ran to court and sued the landlord to force it to keep a promise to them that was contingent upon their keeping their promises. On uncontested facts applicable to the claims actually pleaded, including the fact of Greenleaf's long persistent breaches, the district court followed the law applicable to those uncontested facts, which is Hornbook contract law. No payment of rent, no option. This is reviewed de novo. These determinations are reviewed de novo. Look at the lease, if you wish. There is no independent consideration for any of the options.
What do you do with the American Fence case that seems to say there's a difference as if the person who's not paying rent, if that occurred, like the timing matters, they're saying that because you didn't tell them first that the option was off the table, that they can now try to enforce that even though they're in breach on the obligation to pay rent. And they claim that our American Fence decision supports that.
The answer to that, Your Honor, is that none of those decisions require notice by the landlord. Neither the law nor the contract requires us to tell them you're in default. The default exists independently of any notice. They know they're in default. And if you want to see, the record is replete with communications for years from the landlord saying, please catch up on rent or we will evict you. And there are years of unfulfilled promises saying, okay, we will do so. It was not a surprise to them that they were in default. That existed independent of any notice, nor does the contract nor the law require us to send them some formal notice by certified mail, by posting on the door to say, we are no longer going to honor your option.
Well, they've likened this to a waiver. You heard his argument earlier that you just kind of let them along and let them not pay rent, and then you came in to grab all the cannabis.
Yes.
In a nutshell.
I understand that argument. First, Your Honor, that argument was not raised below. They did not argue waiver below. The second is that those cases that they cite are fundamentally different. In those cases that support a waiver when a landlord accepts late rent, that is a situation where the landlord has now been made whole. For instance, you don't pay rent from January through June, but 1st of July you come in and you make the landlord whole, and the landlord accepts that and moves on. He can't then in August say, I'm going to now terminate the lease based on what you have now made whole. That is not this case. They never made the landlord whole. Ever. So how could we, by not accepting non-payment, waive our rights under the contract? We can't. And the contract itself has an anti-waiver provision. This issue on the option should be the easiest for this court to affirm, based on the uncontested facts and the express withdrawal that you raised, Justice Pickering, of this claim of breach of contract. They said that at summary judgment. We know we are going to lose breach of contract. We hereby withdraw it. And now they would like to resurrect that on appeal?
What about the statement that you tried the offset issue by consent?
That is candidly a stretch. To say when we had the emergency hearing after the eviction and the judge said to them at the time, if you believe something was stolen from you, if you believe something was damaged, you are free to file motions. If we said the same thing, bring it before the court. That is not a consent to waive any defense or to say if you don't bring those motions or if you don't bring those affirmative defenses or a new counterclaim, that we hereby waive our right to argue anything. Nothing prevented them from doing that. The eviction occurred in May of 2021. Greenleaf did not answer Belmont's complaint until June of 21. They had nearly a month after the eviction to answer our complaint and to include within there an affirmative defense of offset. They didn't do it.
Are you? You're not claiming, though, that it was a compulsory counterclaim, the conversion claim, right?
No one's ever argued that.
Okay, so you're not saying that this is preclusive by reason of their non-assertion in this action?
That's not an issue in this case. It's not an issue on this bill. No one's argued that. No one's briefed it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But, sorry,
in the event of breach, didn't the lease provide that Belmont would be entitled to the inventory?
Yes. Yes, the lease says that in paragraph 31, there's also a separate security agreement for all of the goods. So there was nothing preventing these parties from doing so when they answered. There was nothing preventing them to do so before the deadline that they agreed to in the joint case conference report. The time to amend is not in opposition to a summary judgment motion. And that decision by the district court is not reviewed de novo. That's an abuse of discretion, which is not asking this court, if it had been presented to you in the first instance, would you have done something different? That's not the abuse of discretion standard. It is looking at the district court's decision. Did the district court do something wrong? How could it have done something wrong when they waived it by not raising it ever, even though they had ample opportunity to do so? And never taking discovery on it, never producing any sort of information on it. It is not our burden to do that. It is Greenleaf's. And it was not error or abuse of discretion for the district court to say, I'm not going to let you amend your complaint at this stage of the proceeding.
Garner, will you address the security interest in the cannabis license?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd be glad to. This is also an interesting point on appeal because Greenleaf seemingly seeks via declaratory judgment, which was not sought in the district court, either by affirmative claim or by an affirmative defense of illegality, to have this court declare that security agreement illegal and invalid. This security agreement was entered into in 2016. The state of the law in 2016 is different than it is now. What was presented to the district court was solely arguments about the state of the regulations and statutes applicable to cannabis licenses now, retroactively applied to an agreement was entered into in 2016. This state, and no others I know of, have a presumption that we apply those retroactively. So what were they at the time? What they cite to you now on appeal is NRS 453A. It was subsequently repealed and replaced by other statutes, but that is the only statute that was effective at the time in 2016. And even then, that statute only discussed a transfer of those licenses, turning those licenses over to someone else to operate a cannabis establishment. They say nothing about pledging or security interests. But even if we look at the statutes and regulations now, including the Cannabis Compliance Board's own regulations and NRS, I think it's 678B, what do they say now? They say transfers, security interests, those types of pledges can only be done with approval of the regulatory authority. How is that different than what you have here? If you look at our security agreement for these cannabis permits, it is replete with that phrase, with regulatory approval.
There's another action involving a receivership.
Yes.
And I don't know if the pleadings in this case originally sought a receivership or what the genesis of that action is. Is that a separate action? And I ask because I wonder whether it affects jurisdiction at all on this appeal.
I believe that Belmont's original complaint and its First Amendment complaint did seek a receiver. That was not done until after judgment. It is part of the same case number below, Your Honor, but the appeal of the receivership appointment was done by separate appeal of Greenleaf, which I believe now has been dismissed.
And is still pending?
I'm sorry?
It's still pending in this court?
I believe it may have been dismissed, the appeal of that appointment of the receiver. But the receivership was done after the entry of judgment, and it is essentially a judgment receivership under NRS 32. So even if you apply those regulations now, all they really do is say the Cannabis Compliance Board, the regulatory agency that the legislature designated to oversee cannabis licenses, must be aware and must approve everything. Our agreement here does nothing different, nor does the district court's judgment say anything different. It says everything must be done pursuant to regulatory authority, and that is part of what the receivership is about. So to the extent Greenleaf says, makes arguments about hypotheticals, what is the danger here if everything that the district court did and our agreement requires the full light and inspection and vetting of the Cannabis Compliance Board? This argument is largely academic. And even if this court decides we are going to apply those statutes retroactively to invalidate this security agreement, it does nothing to the rest of the judgment. It does nothing to the reality that these appellants didn't pay rent for years, which meant they did not get an option, which meant the landlord, by contract and law, was entitled to go repossess the property. Doesn't change the fact that they failed, despite ample opportunity, to bring claims for conversion or offset, which they didn't. It does not create an abuse of discretion. It does not change the remainder. Unless you have other questions, Your Honor, I'd like to close by saying, reaffirm your adoption of Wood v. Safeway 19 years ago, reaffirm your commitment to that and affirm this righteous summary judgment. Thank you.
Your Honors, I do want to address a couple points. First, the lease specifically says at Section 10 that written notice is required regarding default, breach of lease, and I think that's obviously a very important point, that there is written notice requirements contained in the lease. As it relates to waiver, the complaint filed by Greenleaf originally had waiver. It was throughout the whole complaint. The whole complaint is regarding waiver prior to the purchase option agreement. And even if the claim for breach of contract you guys consider withdrawn, which I don't think it is, I think this is the time to appeal an interlocutory order that controlled the rest of the case and put my client at a significant disadvantage, and I think was wrongfully decided at that time. There still remains the claim of the fairness claim, which is that Greenleaf came in, they were willing to pay off any past due, they were willing to pay for the option to purchase, and based on that, they were entitled to the benefit of that option to purchase agreement. And if there is not specific performance that will come from this at this time, then it still allows for monetary damages. So I believe that that's an important point to note, that that claim is still there. And I know the cannabis briefly came up and the history of the legislation regarding that, but as it relates to that, at no point have any cannabis regulations in this state allowed for a secured interest in any cannabis license, cannabis property, cannabis inventory. None of that has ever been allowed in this state. If you look at any of the regulations, NRS, the 450s, the 650s, the Cannabis Compliance Board regulations, it has never once been allowed in this state. And thus, you don't have to look at the current regulations retroactively. You can look at any of the regulations at any point and any time. And I looked back at respondent's brief as it relates to offset. I don't see anywhere where it actually said that the court required or said that you need to amend your pleadings at this time. It seems that they said that you should have amended them. That's what the respondent's arguments were. And I see that I'm about to run out of time, so unless there's any questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, sir.